This is the OANDA podcast.
This is the OANDA Market Insights podcast, talking to OANDA senior market analysts across the world. And today we're joined by Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you doing?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Let's start with global stocks as they are at the moment, and they've fallen today. And those US-China tensions have mounted over the last few days following that visit of Speaker Pelosi to Taiwan. Is that what is concerning markets at the moment?
There's a bunch of drivers right now. I think that what we're starting to see how Speaker Pelosi's trip to Taiwan is not going to ease those US-China tensions anytime soon. And in fact, there's probably growing risks that, you know, the deglobalization trade is going to become more dominant, and the inflationary pressures are probably going to grow. I think you're going to see that, both economies are in slowdown mode, and I think you'll probably see a little bit more of a fallout from this visit. But I think that's been dominating the headlines. But the primary catalyst right now, I think, is we're getting some pushback from the Fed, and that's probably going to lead markets to reassess their trajectory of interest rates by the Fed. I think that there was a quick rush to anticipate a possible Fed pivot for December, and now it seems we could still see another massive 75 basis point rate increase in September, and the tightening cycle, maybe, yes, it will end at the end of the year. So three more meetings of rate hikes. But I think those calls for rate cuts at some point in the spring were probably premature. So I think what we're going to see is the Fed, when they're done tightening, they're probably going to do everything in their power to keep rates elevated before they have to reverse course.
And we've also seen, and this has probably affected markets as well, that OPEC Plus meeting announcement, which has disappointed many because the adding of 100,000 more barrels per day to the market from September is a bit of a drop in the ocean, isn't it, really?
Very much so. I mean, it was the smallest increase on record for OPEC Plus. It really does not move the needle on helping with the global energy crisis that we're seeing. And I think you have to understand that even though this is their production target, OPEC Plus has not really come close to following up on and delivering those production levels. So it is not going to ease the global supply shortage that we're seeing, which is kind of around 2 million barrels a day. And I think what's going to be difficult is you're going to see the White House is in a position where there's not a lot they can do. They were kind of hoping, and they were vocal about it, that they thought President Biden's trip to Saudi Arabia was successful, and that we were going to see more efforts to help ease this supply shortage. And does the slowing economic data that we're seeing, and I think the first look at manufacturing activity from China, from the Eurozone, from the U.S. was very disappointing, and that falling in contraction territory for Europe was eye-catching. And I think what you're going to see is that you're probably going to have more calls for that demand destruction, which is going to weigh on crude. And today was a very busy day. I mean, in addition to the OPEC Plus meeting, we did have the EIA crude oil inventory report, which I think for a lot of traders, that was a little bit of a surprise. Inventories rose 4.47 million barrels a day, and I think that's going to lead to expectations that we're anticipating a little bit of a drawdown here, and I think what you're going to see is the demand for crude is weakening, and then I think that you're probably going to see that oil is going to struggle to really recapture that $100 level until we start to see a better demand outlook. For with that EIA report, we're still in the we're still in the summer travel season where it's surprising that gasoline demand fell by 7.6%. So I think that you're starting to see, and U.S. production is, you know, remains steady and, you know, it has been climbing. So, you know, this market's slowly working its way to balance. And I think that's really kind of going to make the oil trade a volatile one. And right now you're probably going to see a lot of investors here are, you know, buying oil on dips has worked out nicely, you know, ever since prices turned negative, you know, just a couple of years ago. So I think you're going to see that markets are going to kind of now shy away from buying every dip because we're really starting to notice the demand destruction. And even though this oil market is still in deficit, I think you're probably going to see that trading ranges will probably form here, and I think, you know, WTI should still see some good support around $90. But right now this is a market that's really still focused on global recessionary fears, and until we get beyond that, this is going to be a choppy ride for oil.
And nonetheless, the decision by OPEC Plus is going to be a blow, isn't it, to leaders who wanted production to be ramped up. You mentioned President Biden's trip to Saudi Arabia, where he was in that photograph taken shaking hands with Mohammed bin Salman. Controversial picture. He put himself on the line there, Joe Biden. It hasn't really paid off. So he will be very disappointed with it's not just Saudi Arabia, obviously. We've got Russia as well, a big player in OPEC Plus and all the others. But that was the point of his trip, wasn't it, to Saudi, to try and get the numbers up, and it hasn't paid off.
And the White House has defended that was, you know, not the whole agenda. That was one small part of it, and I think that trying to restore the, you know, U.S. Saudi relations was, you know, the primary goal. And you'll probably see that. You know, this is going to be a complicated relationship, as most are, and you know, I think the expectation is that you know, OPEC Plus, they're seeing all the same data we are. They're you know, they've been trying to capture as much, you know, profit from you know, the global economic recovery. But now it's clearly that the market's in slowdown mode, and what they don't want to do is be caught with over delivering on production, as right now we're, you know, there's still no end in sight as far as, you know, how much of a slowdown we're going to see globally. So I think while energy traders will say they're a little bit surprised on the decision, I think, you know, the world is weakening right now. So I think this expectation that we're not really going to see oil prices surge significantly until you know, the demand outlook improves. And right now it just seems that most of the data points are suggesting weakness for that. And I think there's probably good reason to be a little bit more cautious as far as over flooding the market with supplies right now. And I think that's kind of the mentality OPEC Plus has. You know, they haven't delivered on their quotas, and yes, this, you know, there's about 2 million barrels per day of shortage that we see. But I think OPEC Plus is concerned that if you ramp up production and we really see a significant slowdown, you know, you're going to be over flooding the market, you know, by the end of the year.
Going back to the tensions between the US and China, Ed, over Taiwan, I mean, the timing of this visit by Nancy Pelosi is curious when you consider what's going on in Ukraine with the continuing Russian invasion. It seems that the United States is willing to take on all sides at the moment, which, bearing in mind the economic strife we're all in, is curious.
The trip, it did, you know, catch a lot of people by surprise, I think, more importantly, the White House. But for you know, what I think Pelosi was trying to achieve, you know, if you take a look at, you know, what's happening with Democrats, you know, they're heading into midterm elections with no momentum whatsoever. I think that you're going to see that there has not been a real hard stance taken against China. You're probably going to see that, you know, a lot of this was politically driven to control the messaging as we head into midterms, because, you know, the U.S. economy is working its way towards a recession. I think there's still a good chance that will happen early next year. Democrats are looking, at November and saying, "Wow, we, they could lose a lot of seats," and that, I think you're seeing that. That's why you saw Senator Manchin pivot. That's why, and you were, I think a lot of us were stunned that, that they were able to make some progress on pushing through some deals here. And I think that this is a time when the politics are going to really, I think, dictate where we are. I think, for as far as what we're going to see as a reaction from China is mostly, yes, they'll be doing more military drills, but still the markets are not anticipating a military conflict here. I think there's going to be more focus on how multinationals are going to be able to do business, how the supply chain situation is going to probably worsen. So I think this is a very difficult environment to choose winners right now, especially the on the multinational side of things. And I think we're seeing too much of the world's semiconductors come from Taiwan, and I think that's what is really going to be the focal point. Beijing is going to punish Taiwan, so I think the inflationary pressures are just going to worsen. So while this trip will show, that Democrats are taking a harder stance against China, I think that you're probably going to see this is just going to feed into inflationary pressures, which will probably, end up being a little bit more troubling for the economy.
And it's also a troubled period for crypto as well, Ed. And we've seen today the CEO of MicroStrategy has stepped down after a $1 billion crypto loss. Another blow to that sector.
Very much so. I think MicroStrategy's earnings, everyone knew they were going to be bad. Saylor's decision to step down as CEO, and he still will be the chairman, and I'm sure he'll still be the key voice of the company. It's pretty clear that they've not been able to capitalize on their big bet on Bitcoin. They started to get in during the summer of 2020. So, if you're buying closer to the 10,000, 15,000 level, and then you see prices skyrocket, and unfortunately, you have a fiduciary duty to your clients, to your shareholders, that you need to be able to capitalize on that big run up. And after almost hitting 70,000, it's been pretty much a steady decline, and that's inexcusable. So I think that you're going to see that MicroStrategy is, they're all in on crypto. I mean, that was their business was struggling. I think crypto kind of saved them, but now you're going to see that. I think the pressure is going to be on them to show that they can capitalize when crypto does move in their favor. And this is a very difficult period for the crypto markets, as you've seen too much economic pain for all the institutional and retail investors that got started last year, which was the kind of the peak of of this movement. And now the crypto winter might be ending. I think markets have been digesting, are we still seeing bear market rallies here in equities? Crypto's been, steadying here. I mean, it's still above 20,000. So those calls for 14,000, 10,000 have not come to realization just yet. And I think that there has been an exhaustion in that selling. So we'll see if crypto can continue to stabilize here. And for companies like MicroStrategy, this has been a very difficult environment. And then I think that you'll see that they put all their chips on crypto, and you'll see that if they're able to get out of this crypto winter, then the company will definitely prosper. But right now, this is a difficult time. I think a month ago, everyone was talking about their margin calls, and while that margin call would have been on a small portion of their crypto investment, it would lead to lost confidence. And I think right now, if you're a new investor, if you're someone who's just trying to get 1% of your portfolio exposure into crypto, MicroStrategy, at one point that looked like, a good way of doing it. Now, not so much the case. So it'll be interesting to see how MicroStrategy performs from here on out.
Okay, Ed, before we let you go, of course, we've got two big moments coming up the rest of the week. Bank of England with its interest rate rise announcement tomorrow here in the UK, and non-farm payroll in the United States on Friday.
Very much so. So, inflation, I think you would agree, it's been pretty painful. Hitting a 40-year high, 9.4%, that's pretty. Who would have thought that? Anyway, food and energy prices really just, they're skyrocketing. So that's keeping the pressure on the BOE. I think, this is, they're poised to deliver, the biggest rate hike in 27 years. So I think the market is very much focused in on that. And I think that you'll see, though, while this is going to be a very, very, it's expected to be a massive increase in rates, further rate hikes, that's where markets are starting to price in a little bit less aggressive call. So I think, the peak bank rate, it might, initially, I think people were thinking it was going to go 3.5%. Now it's like below 3%. So I think we'll see. We'll pay close attention to that BOE rate decision. And that's definitely, one of the big events of the week. And then the other one, non-farm payroll, we're going to continue to see a little bit more of a slower pace in hiring. U.S. economy, it's still performing pretty well. The JOLTS number was down this week. That was a little bit of a kind of a red flag that, okay, if someone wants to find the job, there's still a very good chance that they could in this economy. And but I think what we're going to see is the labor market is cooling. And for investors, the non-farm payroll report is going to be closely watched. I think that the one thing that's very interesting about this report is going into it, survey of expectations. The low estimate's 50,000, the high estimate's 320,000. Some of the other, regional surveys, I think, that there's kind of a, I would not be surprised if the whisper number is closer to 120,000 or so. So we'll see exactly how the economy performed. But obviously, if we start to see, steady, weaker prints, and eventually they will turn negative, then that's probably what will be needed to really drive that Fed pivot call. So definitely two big events to finish the week. And I think we'll see markets are going to be zeroed on them.
Okay. Ed, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you. Have a great one.
This is the Oanda Podcast.